Have you ever wanted to connect with someone, but you stopped yourself? Excuses to Connect is a podcast about actively creating the conditions that make meaningful connections easier. In other words, you can make excuses to connect. Join me, Richard Leitai, as I have conversations with experts, friends, and strangers on their struggles and successes when it comes to human connections. As a listener, I hope that you can take these insights and find excuses to connect with more people. After all, you never know how any connection can transform your life. Welcome to episode 16 of the Excuses to Connect podcast. Volunteering has been a part of my life since I was a young teenager and has been the source of many meaningful connections. Not only that, but it's allowed me to take on leadership positions, learn more about the agencies that serve my community, and given me an opportunity to help others. Volunteering is still a very big part of my identity and how I like to spend my time. My guest today lives and breathes volunteering as well. Alice Lamb is the co-founder of Good Neighbor, which is the first pay what you want thrift store in the city of Calgary, and it's completely volunteer run. The store opened 3 months ago and has been a hub of connections and a way to create a more inclusive and sustainable city. But before co-founding Good Neighbor, Alice has had a long history of volunteering. In this episode, we chat about the story of her parents fleeing Vietnam because of the communist regime, how that shaped the types of causes she's passionate about, and the societal challenges that we are facing right now. This is Volunteering to Build and Serve Communities with Alice Lamb. Well, Alice, I'm so excited to have you as a guest on the podcast today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited to be able to finally connect.
Yes, awesome. So I know you do a ton of community and volunteer work in your day-to-day life now, including pay what you can thrift store, a community fridge, a volunteering platform, and a flea market. But I'd actually like to start in the past. So I know that we both share a similar background in the case of being children of immigrant parents, specifically Chinese parents who are refugees from Vietnam. So I'm curious on how you feel like your upbringing has had an impact on who you are today and the type of work that you do.
Well, it definitely had a big impact, you know. I think I share a very similar background to a lot of folks whose parents were a part of Chinese diaspora. You know, my grandparents moved from China over to Vietnam in search of like a better non-communist opportunity type place. They went there at a young age, started their business. But of course, as we all know, in the 50s and the 60s, the communist regime like took over. Then there was the Vietnam War and people had to flee again. And so at about 15 years old, my father was one of the boat people. He left Vietnam on a boat that was destined for, I believe, Malaysia at the time, but it was also one of those decoy boats for the communist government to find out who were traitors who were trying to flee Vietnam at the time. And so the boat was stranded in the middle of the sea, and my dad just decided to take a risk. He said, I'd rather go, you know, die in the sea than go to jail again as a part of the Viet Cong army. And so he ended up grabbing an empty gasoline plastic barrel thing and jumping into the sea, cut off his shorts. It's very dramatic, made for movie style. He still has the shorts that he cut, pants that he cut into shorts. Then he ended up floating around for a few hours and ran into an Indonesian fisherman boat. And for those of you who are from the Chinese background, you'll know that there are many dialects and many villages in China. And what he realized was that the folks who were operating this fishing boat actually spoke a dialect that his family spoke. And so as soon as they realized they shared a common tongue, they rescued him and actually went back and rescued everybody on the boat as well and took them to an Indonesian refugee camp run by the UN. And so that changed his life forever. He ended up getting baptized in that Indonesian refugee camp, which he went back to for the first time after 35 years, just a few years ago, actually. And he was eventually sponsored by the Canadian government. He was able to move to Calgary he never intended to stay here. He thought he was going to go to the States, start a new life there, because that was still like the land of opportunity. It was still where everybody wanted to go. But he settled down, had roots here, and had children, and it was just wasn't as easy to move anymore. So in the regard of how my background kind of contributed to who I am today, because my parents were low literacy refugees, they didn't have a ton of high level employment opportunities. And because of their lower income status when we were young, they weren't able to really afford childcare and things like that. So from a very young age, from as early as I can remember, 4 or 5 years old, like we went to work with my parents. My mom worked at the Sun Ice jacket factory back when the Olympics was around. They were really sewing a lot of jackets for that. And so I was a baby in a carriage, like at the Sun Ice factory, you know, where women were sewing jackets and things like that. You know, you'd never see that today, but that just kind of speaks to the time, right? Like they wanted people to work and you could bring your baby. And so from a very young age, hanging out with my family meant working with my family. And so it was never, there was never a division of like work versus home life. It was kind of like work is just what we do, you know, and it's perfectly normal until you go to school with a predominantly Caucasian population and you realize that their parents are at home making lunch for them. There's a stay-at-home mom, there's people, you know, and it's completely different. And for a long time, I really rejected that, you know, I was really mad, right? Resentful that this was my life, that I felt like I didn't have that perfect picket fence life growing up. I went to a very affluent school in Calgary. You know, we were like the low income kids in the school. They wanted to give us a better opportunity. So they drove us 30 minutes every day to go to a better school in the Southwest. And I resented it. I like hated the fact that I was so different from everybody, that we were poor, that my parents didn't speak English at all. Like from, you know, I didn't learn to speak English until kindergarten or in grade one. And so there was for a long time, this kind of identity crisis. And I think a lot of people like me who are first generation Canadians also sometimes feel this struggle of like not feeling like you belong to your ethnic culture, but also not feeling like you belong in Canada either. Yeah. That all to say that it contributed because I was always searching for community, always searching for connections, always trying to reconnect with my roots and find myself. And through that, I did a lot of volunteering. And my parents, being of kind of a Christian background, they also, you know, really emphasized helping your neighbors and being a good person and doing whatever you can to help somebody in need from a very young age. And so regardless of my political or religious affiliations, you know, I do have those strong values instilled in me. And I'm grateful for that now that I'm, you know, 3 decades older, you know, I really appreciate it.
Wow. What a story. Yeah, I don't need to get too much into my background, but I relate to what you're saying of the struggles that my parents went through and just the challenges of growing up here in Canada. I'm curious on how you started volunteering.
Yeah, it was a necessity in the beginning. You know, I just like many high school students wanted to volunteer, kind of fill up my resume. If you were looking for a job and you were a 15-year-old, you know, there wasn't much to put on there if you hadn't volunteered. And so I went on a website called Volunteer Calgary at the time, which is now Propelis or Volunteer Connector. And I went on and I signed up to volunteer at different events. One was like a weekend to end breast cancer kind of information session person. So I sat there and told people about the race to end breast cancer and how they could contribute and how it was a fundraiser. But my more impactful volunteer gig was actually volunteering at a library in Forest Lawn. And so basically my job was to read with immigrant children. And because these kids didn't really know a lot of English, I identified a lot with them. I was like, man, that's who I was back when I was 5, 6 years old, you know, I had parents that couldn't read or write English. And I wish I was a part of a program like this. And so it really made an impact on me. And I could see the look on the parents' faces at how grateful they were for a team of volunteers to want to help their kids learn English, because it was something that they knew that they really couldn't provide to their children. And so that really instilled in me a strong impression of how valuable volunteers are in our community in helping people become better versions of themselves or more skilled versions of themselves. Like it's all about these connections and making, helping each other grow. So yeah, that was kind of my first big volunteer gig.
Right. And since then, like, what are the types of community causes or volunteering causes that you're really passionate about and that you put your time and energy into?
Yeah, I always say that it's kind of like a ripple effect, right? Like wherever mm-hmm. you start, you kind of, because all these, because of intersectionality, because of how closely related, like poverty has a touch point on immigrants, on right. seniors, on youth. I ended up kind of volunteering in the realm of one of those things at some point or another. But really, one of my first governance volunteer activities was to join the board of the Calgary Immigrant Women's Association. And this was a really important volunteer opportunity because I'd done a lot of grassroots volunteering. So on the hand, you know, events and mm-hmm. doing things directly with clients, but I had never been able to do things as like a member of a board. And I really was excited to be able to give him the opportunity as a young person in my early 20s to join a board that represented an organization that had 20,000 clients a year, right? So I learned a lot through sitting on that board. I sat there for 7 years. I eventually worked my way up to being the chair of the governance committee to vice chair. And it was a wonderful learning experience. And the whole thing is, it's like, if I wasn't out there making connections, I never would have gotten this gig, right? Like if you're looking at resumes and you're doing succession planning for your board and you look at, you know, there's like a 23-year-old versus like a 45-year-old lawyer, you're going to go for the 45-year-old, right?
Right.
So it was through networking and through making connections and being really vocal about, you know, what I wanted to do in my life. I was like, I want to connect with immigrants because that's a population that I care deeply about. I really want to help them become active and engaged members of society and civically engaged and things like that. So how can I help? And it starts with really building up their literacy and getting them out of poverty. So that's where I centered my causes around. And then eventually it went to immigrant seniors and then, you know, doing companionship and translation programs for seniors and then really learning about where seniors were at in a city like Calgary and learning mm-hmm. all the gaps and the income struggles that a lot of them have. And eventually it moved on to doing social and creative activities with seniors. And finally, this past summer, it's evolved to doing stuff with youth, right? Like, you know, lower income youth from a variety of different cultural backgrounds with our first summer camp called Change at YYC. And so we were able to create this pay what you want summer camp for youth in the neighborhood of Crescent Heights. And the focus was really on activism, on civic engagement, and on social enterprise. So it's really come full circle. And I don't know what's next, but even with Good Neighbor, right? Like we mm-hmm. through the fridge, wanting to feed families, wanting to feed Calgarians that don't have money for groceries, we were able to learn about more gaps in the system. And now we've created a space where we can offer clothing and food, right? So the more you volunteer, the more you learn about what needs to be solved. And then you just start tackling them.
Right. And I know you've alluded to this already about all these connections that happen through volunteering. I wonder if you could just expand on that, like how volunteering helps to build connections.
I always say that the best way to network is through volunteering because you're finding people who have the same intrinsic values as you. So it's not just about like how much money you make or where you went to school, but it's about what you care about. And so some of the jobs that I've had, some of the best people that I meet that I've created projects like Good Neighbor, our thrift store, or the community fridge with was all people that I met through volunteering. And the reason it works is because we have these shared values and these shared visions of what we think our community should be. And so I'm constantly inspired by these volunteers that I meet because they, a lot of the times, you know, aren't as privileged even, like, and sometimes they're just like students, new graduates, like not a lot of opportunity, still wanting to find a job and stuff, but still really passionate about volunteering in the sector. And then other times it's like meeting people who I would never be able to meet because they're like the CEOs or executives of like large corporations and large mm-hmm. companies that I would never have the chance to talk to. You know, but I get to meet them through volunteering in a more kind of humbling environment in a space where it's really about sharing who we are as people, not just our job titles. And so a lot of parents that I meet, especially Asian parents, are like, how do I get my kids to be like you, to be like a leader? How do I get them to be, how do I get them to be the manager at their job? Or how do I get them to get their promotion? And I'm like, honestly, leadership it requires a lot of good communication skills, right? Like it's not just having the the technical skills to do your job, but it's also being able to empathize with people, being able to solve problems and being able to articulate it eloquently and in a way that makes people want to help you and want to further the mission of whatever goal you're trying to achieve. And the best way to increase your communication skills is to talk to people outside of your comfort zone. Talk to people from different demographics, different backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, different language abilities. And the best way to do that is through volunteering, because you don't know who you're going to meet, right? Like, it's not just like, oh, this is my comfort zone of my friends and my family, and, you know, I can act however I want to act. Like, I know how to talk to them. It's really about talking to strangers, talking to people from different walks of life. And so through volunteering, I've been able to learn those skills, right? Like communicating with a wide variety of individuals. And I think that's why when it comes to public speaking or doing a podcast or sharing my opinion or understanding how to be a good advocate for the vulnerable community, it was all skills that I learned through volunteering. You know, it just gave me, for everybody that only talks to their coworkers or family and friends, it's like I'm talking to like 50 other people from outside this network every day and learning and absorbing everything from them. So yeah, it's so impactful. That's why I never say volunteering is truly altruistic, because you really get so much benefit out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I started volunteering when I was in grade 7 with Immigrant Services Calgary through one of their youth volunteering programs, and then later went on to Youth Central, which is also a big organization in Calgary. And yeah, ever since then, volunteering has been very much part of my life. So I agree, it's helped me with all sorts of stuff with leadership, getting jobs and so on, because you get to develop all those skills and meet all these different types of people that you wouldn't normally.
It's also like a softer spot to land, you know, if you want to take a risk and learn some new skills or try something new. Like if I had to learn Photoshop on my own, you know, it would be scary, but to be able to do it for a nonprofit or learn how to build a website for a nonprofit, like you just have so much more support and you kind of land softly. Like if you don't get it perfect, it's okay. Like you can keep learning, right? I've learned so many tangible skills like that as well, like event planning and organizing and volunteer recruitment and things like that, all because I was willing to raise my hand and say, hey, I'll give it a try, you know, and if I need help, I'll ask for help. But that's what I find a lot of nonprofits need. It's not the person with the perfect skill set to do something. It's somebody who's willing to say yes and to give it a try.
Right. Yeah. So there may be listeners tuning in right now that have never volunteered before or only have done it a few times that want to get more involved. So I'm curious what message you would want to say to those folks.
I would say the easiest way, you have two ways. You can either start by doing something that you're really comfortable with, like a skill set that you use every day at work or at school that you know that you'll be good at, or you can choose something that's completely outside of your comfort zone that you want to learn. I have met people from both sides where they say, you know, oh, I do that all day at work, I don't want to do that anymore. Or I've never tried doing that and I really want to learn that skill. Find me something that can do that. And I think the one thing that you really have to consider as a volunteer is, just because you're giving people your time for free doesn't mean that you can treat it as like a casual thing that you can drop in and out of, right? It takes a lot of money and resources and time for people to train volunteers, just like it takes time and money and resources to train staff members. Yeah. And so you really don't want to commit to something unless you are able to follow through and attend the weekly event or the monthly event or whatever. I would say that if you're just starting out and you don't really know what to do, try to find like one-off volunteer opportunities, right? Because through those experiences, like whether you're volunteering to help clean up at the Grow Calgary Farm, or you're doing a painting session with seniors, or you're doing a friendly visiting program for isolated people who need a phone call to check in, like that's where you realize like the type of population and the type of thing that you want to help. There's literally no end to the type of organizations that need volunteers, whether it's environmentally focused, sustainability, women, children, domestic violence, homelessness, homeless seniors, homeless youth, homeless teens, right? Like there's a whole plethora of opportunities. So doing your research, follow these organizations on social media, like you have to kind of do a little bit of work too. Like it's not easy and you have to put yourself out there. I think I spoke earlier about how I ended up joining the board of Calgary Immigrant Women's Association. That didn't just happen because I Googled them and was like, oh, I want to join them. It was like I had probably 6 or 7 conversations with Calgarians that I said, hey, do you know anybody working in the immigrant sector or volunteering in the immigrant sector? Like, can you put me in contact with them? I'd just like to know more, right? Like, you kind of have to reach out and do a little bit of research. I also highly recommend folks to volunteer with their families. Like, that's something that I'm really passionate about, because it kind of takes you out of that just like dinner table kind of time, right? Like, you get to bond together and really work together to help people who are very marginalized or very vulnerable. And it's a great way to communicate shared values with your family as well. And so if you're a more shy person and you volunteer with a friend, like, maybe ask them, like, where do they volunteer? Do you think that they have space for somebody like you? Could you go with them one time? Yeah. And then, you know, if you have really trouble finding stuff, like, you can visit our website. You know, we have our listings there of different volunteer opportunities, but we also act as kind of like a concierge service. So you can email us directly and say, this is what I'm looking at, this is my availability, and we'll try our hardest to match you with something that, or give you a few options of what would work. And that's partly why we started Volley in the first place. It was just like, I met so many young people that were like, I'm interested in volunteering, but I don't know where. Or like, oh, I applied to these places, but they never got back to me, so I gave up on volunteering. And it just takes more work. And I always want to remind the listeners too, like, nonprofits are not working with a ton of abundant resources, right? Like, if they don't get back to you, it's just because they probably don't have a staff member in that position right now. It doesn't mean that they don't need you as a volunteer or they don't appreciate your application. It's just that this nonprofit sector has always been historically very underfunded, and they are trying to do the most they can with very little resources. So yeah, just to be a little bit patient as well.
Right. So this platform Volley, where people can find these volunteering opportunities, I'm curious what the process was like for you to start that.
Yeah, it was, again, and we speak a lot about connections, but it was like literally telling everybody I knew that I had this idea. I wanted to make Tinder for volunteering. I wanted to make it super easy for millennials. And you spoke earlier about Youth Central. Like, I love Youth Central as a concept. It's so great to get like young people between the ages of 12 to 17 to volunteer in a safe environment and to make big impacts in our city. But one thing that I spoke to Penny Hume, the executive director, or the former executive director, about was like, what happens to these kids once they graduate, you know? What kind of Youth Central-esque thing is there for them after that? And so my platform was really geared at providing a resource for, you know, millennials, like graduates, to find volunteering opportunities after they leave a place like Youth Central even. And I told everybody about it because I met so many of my friends, like I said earlier, who were like, yeah, I'll volunteer, but I don't have time to do all that research. Or like, oh, I tried volunteering once and it was a horrible experience and I'm never going to do it again. You know, there's so much value in volunteering, like the things that I've mentioned earlier that I've personally gained from that. I want everybody to be able to experience that same thing, because I think it just makes you a better and more active citizen. And honestly, if it wasn't through volunteering, I wouldn't have learned really how to care about other people. Like, I would still be one of those voters who just votes for what things that I care about for myself, you know, instead of for those people who don't have a voice. Right. And so I eventually talked to the right person. It was the right time, right place. And they introduced me to a group called Civic Tech YYC, which is a volunteer run tech meetup of civically engaged people like myself and, you know, your regular Calgarians who have an idea of how to make our city better with software developers. And I was asked to pitch the idea at a hackathon, and people built a part of it. And after the meeting, they were so committed to this website because they themselves understood how difficult it was to find volunteer opportunities, that they wanted to keep working on it for about a year. We met up every Wednesday, we had pizza, and people coded, and I worked on like the kind of development of it and like the branding of it and reaching out to nonprofits and things like that. We got a lot of no's as well in the process. A lot of people were like, oh, we don't need this, nobody cares about this, don't bother, why are you wasting your time? And we also equally had people that were like, this is amazing, how are you going to monetize? How are you going to make money? How are you going to do it? You know, and talking as a team, you know, we never wanted to start this as a money-making venture. It was just something to solve an issue in Calgary to help more people volunteer. And because the software developers and myself volunteered our time to create this, like, we never wanted to have a money aspect to it. It would just wouldn't be fair to kind of, how do we equate who's worked more and who deserves more money, right? And I kind of feel like it was a really good decision to keep it like free to use for everybody, both the nonprofits and the individuals, and to make it as accessible as possible. Like, it really keeps us grounded. And yeah, a year later, we were able to have the version 2 of our website. The version that you see today is version 3. Eventually, we do want to have a mobile app. And that's something that, you know, because we were volunteer driven, we didn't factor into the play that like there would be a global pandemic and everybody would be working from home. Right. And so I'm very like understanding and saying that, hey, if you don't want to volunteer in your computer after you've worked on your computer for 8 to 10 hours a day, like, I totally get it. So don't worry, like, the website's fine. It works. And we've been able to help over 2000 people find volunteer opportunities. The number grows every day. We've had people reach out and say, I've lived in Calgary for 10 years and I've Googled and I've, you know, have used other websites, but this one has really made it super easy for me to find the causes that I care about and to help me become an active volunteer. And so That's all worth it, right?
Amazing. I know something that was started during the pandemic was Good Neighbor, which was back in July, I believe. Yeah. So I'm curious what your inspiration was behind Good Neighbor.
Yeah, it was really started because of our work the previous summer with the Calgary Community Fridge. We saw that there was a huge desire and a huge supply of clothing that most people were either just throwing out or bringing to places like Value Village, which are for-profit thrift stores. And, you know, good quality clothing wasn't getting to vulnerable Calgarians that needed it. And with the pandemic still ongoing, like, there's a lot of families still that still haven't bounced back, that still haven't been called back to work, that still haven't been able to recover their business. And a lot of people couldn't afford clothes or food or both, you know? And so we always said that if we could have like an indoor location for the fridge and an indoor location for like clothing and books and things like that, we would totally do it, just because the demand is there and the supply is there. Like, if you're thinking about sustainability at all, like, all these items, like, we have thousands of items leaving the store every day, going to new homes, like, that stuff would have all ended up in the landfill. We don't have like a scientist or like a greenhouse gas calculator, but that's something that I know that we're really helping to make an impact on, is like the environmental aspect of this. And then social aspects, like, we are able to help, you know, there's probably 300 to 400 people a week that come to our store. We're only open 3 days a week. And so think about the volume of people that we are able to help through this initiative. And again, it's all volunteer run. And other than paying for like our utilities and taxes and things like that, all the money goes to buying food for the community. So it's really a great initiative and the first of its kind in Calgary. And again, like, if it wasn't for volunteering and networking and, you know, being connected to people who really care about a better vision for Calgary, I would have never thought of this idea on my own. I wouldn't be sitting at home watching TV being like, huh, what about a pay what you want thrift store? You know, because like, I wouldn't understand the demand. I wouldn't understand the supply side of it. But through volunteering and through meeting community members who need this kind of stuff, I knew that this would make a huge impact. And so we went for it.
I'm wondering if you have a story of how Good Neighbor has impacted people, like either on the volunteer side of things or the people that actually go to access the store.
Oh my gosh. On the volunteer side, we have about 40 volunteers that make Good Neighbor run smoothly. It takes a lot of work. One of my favorite stories is I have a friend now, Judy, who is a senior who lives in Chinatown. She's Caucasian, moved here a few years ago to be closer to her kids. Then she really didn't have a community. You know, she knew her neighbors in her building, but she was bored all day. Her health was deteriorating. She's low income herself. And one day she walked by the store and said, hey, I want to volunteer. I used to run a clothing store back in Ontario. It's really changed her life. Like, she's been able to now meet like people she would never normally meet, right? Like, she's in her 60s and she's meeting and volunteering with kids that are in their 20s. She's volunteering with people from different cultural backgrounds where English isn't their first language. And so for her, she's always saying like how this has made such a big impact on her mental health and her physical health. Like she has somewhere to go and something to do. You know, it doesn't matter that she's not getting paid, because the social and like psychological sides of it are so important and impactful. And then from the client side, like we have now become this community hub in downtown. Like this area that we're in is surrounded by office towers that's mostly been empty for the past 2 years. But Calgarians often forget that Calgary is also made up of a lot of like downtown residential apartments, especially subsidized housing. So, you know, low income housing for seniors, for people who are vulnerable, that kind of thing. And there really wasn't a community hub for them to go to either, right? So now we've become that place where every week our neighbors from the buildings come and check out what we have in the pantry. They donate some things. We get to have these conversations and ask them about their lives. It's about making connections here too, right? And then they go out and they tell their friends about it. They spread it through word of mouth, but it's honestly been very emotional and very inspiring to meet some of our neighbors, especially our unhoused neighbors, saying, you know, it's like, I would be dead if it wasn't for the store, but like you really made a huge impact on my standard of living. Like it sucks being homeless, obviously. And there's a huge shortage of affordable housing and housing places right now. And there's a huge shortage of shelter beds because of the pandemic. And so, you know, being able to at least provide them with food and clothing is not going to replace the necessity of housing, but it still makes a difference. And we've had individuals come in and say, hey, I was able to get like a clean outfit from you 3 months ago when you guys first opened. And now I want to make a donation because I got into like a rehabilitation program and I got into housing. And, you know, I just want to pitch in and help support you however you can. And so it's very emotional in that sense. And, you know, because we're located downtown, we are very supportive of harm reduction, things like that. So being able to provide like naloxone kits that are literally saving lives, and having, you know, educating our clients and our volunteers about what naloxone is and why harm reduction is important, and, you know, why there are gaps in the social sector and why people are being left behind. Like it's really important because we're really training advocates for the future, right? Like we have an election coming up. It's like, don't just vote for the guy who's cutting taxes. Like think about what taxes do for the community. Think about this, you know, as individuals, I always say it's easy for me to bring a bag of groceries to the fridge, but I cannot build affordable housing. Like this has to be a policy-led initiative and a collaboration between different orders of government and nonprofits. And so being able to be here and use this space is like our, to push our agenda for a more sustainable and inclusive Calgary has been amazing.
I'm curious of how you would respond to this concern, because I know it's a potential concern with this pay what you can model where people can take advantage of it. I'm curious what your response to that would be.
We've been really vocal, similar with the fridge. We got a lot of the same questions, like, what do you do if somebody takes everything from the fridge, or at the store? What do you do? I see people taking things for free at the store and then selling it at the train station. And I'm like, really, we should be less concerned about policing other people's behavior and really looking at the reason why they have to do that to survive. Nobody wants to sell things at a train station. Nobody wants to take food from a pantry and travel 35 minutes by bus only to sometimes find it empty. You know, it's a societal problem. Like I see this increase in demand for food and clothing as a failure of our society. And it just speaks to the inequities that exist because of our, you know, relying too heavily on one industry sector, relying too heavily on people to pull themselves up from their bootstraps, cutting taxes too much, cutting funding to affordable housing and social initiatives, right? And so I always challenge the person who's saying those things to really say, like, you know, I'm closer to poverty than I am to becoming the next billionaire. I have a house, I have car payments. If I were to lose my job and have to rely on EI if I qualified, I would not be able to pay for all my bills. That's a lot of Calgarians right now. Even the CERB, everybody was like, oh, people are just freeloading off of CERB. And it's like, yeah, for a family, $2,000 a month is not enough to feed your family and to pay for your bills. And we do get the question where it's like, oh, I saw that person pulling up in their car, you know? And they're grabbing groceries and they're grabbing all this stuff. Like, that's not fair. And it's like, those people need food too, right? Just because you have a car doesn't mean that you can afford to pay for your groceries. And we have a lot of seniors, you know, they may get like old age security and CPP and things like that, but it's not much. It's like $1,200, $1,300 a month, you know? And guess what's really expensive these days is medication. And it's a vicious cycle, right? It's like the less healthily these seniors eat, the more reliant they are on medication, the greater chance they're going to get heart disease, diabetes, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And it just like keeps, it's a vicious cycle that keeps growing. The only way to stop it is to make sure people have enough money to buy healthy and fresh foods, that people have safe, adequate housing, that people have access to universal medication, right? A lot of people before they came here, they like bought groceries at Dollarama. What kind of food and what kind of lifestyle do you think that contributes to? Even families, like I'm like, you cannot deny the fact that like grocery costs for fresh fruits and vegetables have gone up 30% in the past year for a normal family. Like your income did not go up by that much to accommodate for that, right? So it is a bigger issue than people think. And yes, we are helping people and we're cute and it's a friendly, nice face and stuff like that. But it really, I'm like, ringing the bell, right? Like I could have chosen this podcast to talk about, you know, how shiny and nice and how warm, fuzzy feeling everything is, but it's, you know, it's not the case. I would be doing a disservice to our community if I did that. I really want listeners to realize like our society is not in a good place right now. And it might sound like extreme, but it really isn't. Like I challenge listeners to really volunteer and meet these individuals and listen to their stories themselves. Like if you don't want to listen to me, listen to where people are coming from, because I don't want Calgary to end up like Toronto with the encampments. I don't want Calgary to end up like East Hastings with a huge opioid crisis, right? Because it's all preventable and we have the resources to prevent it. And if we don't, Calgary will have a larger and more expensive problem to solve in the long term.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious what you see as the future of volunteering then. I mean, in all your years of doing this type of work, like where do you see it going from here?
I've seen a trend towards more episodic type of volunteering, you know, like drop-in friendly, family friendly, group friendly activities, things that people can come and do one time. Schedules are so hard to manage right now. And there are a lot of nonprofits that, because volunteers aren't the most reliable sometimes, like they've turned to kind of just hiring people to do certain positions. But volunteering really isn't just about, you know, helping people in the moment. It's also about like building community and beautifying our communities. And so I see a lot more emphasis on volunteering for sense of place, for making our cities more beautiful, like mural work, community cleanup work, planning events, things like that, more focus on arts and culture, which I think are also really, really important components of a thriving city, right? Like investment in arts and culture. And so that's what I see. And I also see more individuals like just realizing that they have to build it into their schedule and have initiative for it. And it's not something that will just like, you know, plop on your head and say, hey, here's a perfect volunteer opportunity for you, right? Like I see that people are realizing that they do have to really consider deeply about whether this is something that they can fit into their lives. And that's something that I've done with my schedule, is to really ensure that I can continue both working and volunteering and taking care of my own, you know, mental health and self-care and things like that, because I love it. And if I want to keep it going, I'm going to have to make sure that it's sustainable. I don't want to burn out, and I never want to stop doing this.
Right. On that topic, I am curious how you manage all these things that you do, because from my perspective, it seems like, wow, you're doing all these things and I wouldn't be able to do it. So I'm just curious how.
And I think you're right. Like I wouldn't be able to do it either if it wasn't for a team of volunteers helping me. You know, like none of the things that I'm responsible for, whether it's the fridge, Good Neighbor, Volley, Tiger Stead Flea, even my job, like none of it would be possible if I relied solely on myself. So some of the leadership skills that I've learned that have been helpful is like, you can help guide the ship, but you don't really necessarily have to be super controlling of like what color the ship is, what people want to do, how they do it, right? It's like, we have a collective goal. And I think that reading about the white supremacist kind of notion of the North American work ethic and the North American work style, there's always an emphasis on control, perfectionism, time, you know, wanting to do things quickly, and things are very hierarchical. And I really try to emphasize a different way of doing stuff. So I can tell you that if it was up to me, Good Neighbor would not turn out this cute, because I am not a creative, right? Like if I was just like a tyrant leader that was like, I want things this way and you're going to do, you know, and I said no to everything, like Good Neighbor would look like Reitman's or something, like just something totally uninspiring. But like, because we collaborated where it was just like, okay, we need paint on the walls. Somebody volunteered to like design that. When empowering others to pitch in how they can and meeting them where they are results in, you know, I'm the one that people always make do like media, and I answer a lot of questions just because I'm very comfortable with it. But, you know, it doesn't mean that just because I'm the voice of it, that I'm the only one doing anything. It really is a more comprehensive anthill type of situation where it's very coordinated. There's a lot of players, everybody doing their part. And it's also very important for me to continue to check in on the people helping me, right? Like, where are you at and how can I support you so that either like if you need to take a break or if you want to do more, you know, like continually checking in is also something that a good leader has to do and a good connector has to do. And, you know, really remembering what motivates them to do what they're doing and ensuring that I help them achieve their goals as well. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm always happy to speak to everybody who has like an idea. Like if I can help and I can connect them to other people, then great, you know, or I can tell them about some of the failures that I've had or some of the roadblocks that I've met, you know, in kind of these past 10 years of trying to make stuff happen. I think people are surprised by how quickly now we are able to execute things. And it didn't just happen overnight. Like Volley has been around for like 3 years officially as a website, but I was planning that for 6 years, you know, and same with Tigerstead Flea. Like these are all things that I've thought about for a long time and, you know, kind of imagined in my head and visualized. And, you know, when the time came, it wasn't like starting from scratch and brainstorming from scratch, right? Like, it was like, here's like the framework of what I want to do. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think? And how can we make it even better? So that's something that I think people have to realize is that, yeah, it doesn't all fall on my shoulders. And I get a lot of messages like that. Like, are you taking care of yourself? Are you like, you know, do you have self, you know, is everything okay? Like, I feel like you're working too hard. And something else that I think in the past 2 years that I've gotten really good at, and it sucks that I got good at it after 30, because I'm like, man, if I was in my 20s and I understood these concepts, like, boy, would I be doing things differently. But, you know, the number one thing is boundaries. Right? Mm. Like not having to say yes to everything. And, you know, in North America, we have this notion that's like, oh my gosh, it's like lost opportunity. So I have to say yes, or else I miss that exposure, or else I miss this thing, you know? And it's like, there's time for people to do whatever they want forever. You know, like we are now living to 100 years old. Like for the people, I get people who feel bad all the time. Like, oh, I just don't have time or energy to volunteer right now. I feel so bad. Like, I wish I was like you. And I was like, I may not have time or energy in 10 years, you know, but I want to do my part while I still can. Whereas in 10 years, you may have time and energy. So don't worry about it. You know, it's not a race to see who's doing the most and when. It's really more about creating this ecosystem mm-hmm. of caring for one another so that when you are ready to do so, you know, people, you know what to do and you know where to reach out and people will be supportive of it.
Fantastic. So on that note, if there are any listeners that want to reach out to you with their idea or just to send you or whatnot, where would you like to direct listeners to?
Honestly, they can always send me a DM on Volley app or send me an email, admin@volleyapp.com. That's the easiest way. But if you end up, you know, reaching out through the Tigerstead Flea account or through Twitter @alamyyc, I'm pretty responsive because yeah, as I said earlier, like I feel like we're at a race against time and I want more people who are passionate with ideas. Like I want to help them as much as possible because we need to like really start solving some of these problems. And I can't do it on my own. So I'm happy to help whoever else wants to be a part of this solution.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I love connecting with connectors and you're definitely a connector.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering if you have a final message or takeaway you'd want listeners to leave with.
Yeah, I think never feel pressure to say that like anything rests on your shoulders, you know, and know that not all connections result in success. Not all connections result in a positive experience or a negative experience. And just to be kind to yourselves and to be open to the fluidity of our lives. Like, nobody knew that we would be in a global pandemic for 2 years and counting. This is how we live our lives now. And we have to be able to pivot and shift and to still continue to care about one another. And so the best way, you know, to care about others is to first care about yourself. So be kind to yourself. And really, as I said, like, look at your boundaries and don't feel like you have to compete with anybody else to achieve anything, because we are just balls of dust in this world and it really isn't that serious. So, you know, just do what you can when you can and be kind to others as well with the same sentiment.
Great. I have to put that on a sticky note on my wall that I'm just a ball of dust. It'll be a good reminder.
It's true. I'm just like, it's not that serious, you know, like, enjoy life and go crazy if you want to, or be serious and hunker down, but make it yours, right? Like, right. Make your life yours.
Awesome. Well, it was such a pleasure chatting with you, Allison, hearing all the amazing work that you're doing or helping to coordinate. And yeah, it was great having you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Remember to check out the show notes of the episode, where you can find a link to my website, excusestoconnect.com. There, you can find out the other initiatives that I'm working on. The intro and outro music were written by Megan Rennie. You can check out her Instagram and SoundCloud in the show notes. There are also links to leave a voice message, as I'd love to hear from listeners. You can leave a comment or ask a question that might be featured in a future episode. Lastly, there's a link to Buy Me a Coffee. This is a website that supports content creators, where you can donate some money on a one-time or monthly basis. If you love what I'm doing and want to support, you can buy me a metaphorical coffee. Finding excuses to connect is what I love to do, what I'm good at, and what I think the world needs more of. Consider sharing this podcast with anyone who might benefit from it. I hope you have a wonderful day and make some new connections. After all, you never know how any connection can transform your life.